Any matter, this matter's been docketed for a while, and we've worked through a number of scheduling problems and so forth to finally reach a date to have council present. So we appreciate your presence and your briefing, and we look forward to some illumination from you during council. You're familiar with our rules. When the light's green, you've got a full run, and it gets amber, you plan to hit some other point, you might well go ahead and do that. When you have a red light, you should stop. But bears remembering, part of this is to get answers to the questions we have, so we want you to fully answer the questions that we have. I will say that, as you know, based on the stages in this case, we put forward to each side a series of questions to you. You've responded to those in writing, but it would be helpful to us that, in addition to the other arguments you plan to make, that you would address the questions that we put forth with you. Otherwise, we're ready to proceed. We call Mr. Wershaw. How do you pronounce it?
It's pronounced
Wershaw. Wershaw. Okay. Didn't want to butcher it.
May it please the court. Nearly 8 years have passed since Scott Panetti was last evaluated for competency to be executed. During that time, Mr. Panetti's mental health has notably declined. And we provided state courts and federal district court with new and recent evidence that indicates a substantial change in Mr. Panetti's behavior and a qualitative difference in the nature of his psychotic symptoms. There are four main pieces of evidence that we provided. The first was Mr. Panetti's unprecedented request to be prescribed antipsychotic medication. Prior to that, nearly 20 years on death row, Mr. Panetti had insisted that he had been cured of his schizophrenia by doctors.
Counsel, we know that your client has a long history of mental difficulties. I don't think that's a challenge. I want to direct you to the procedural posture we're now in. I find it somewhat confusing. And so if you'll just help me along, if you would. Turn the clock back, and we have Panetta is on death row. He's had prior earlier hearings some years back, 7 years or so since he's been examined in court proceeding for his competency to be executed. Now, we have a filing by the court of a date of execution. We'll come back to the circumstances of that. And then at that point, what procedural processes did you have available to you when you learned of the execution date?
Your Honor, the procedural avenues that we had available to us was Article 4605, the Texas Code of Criminal.
Keep your voice up.
I'm sorry.
I've been in this courtroom many times over the years, and the acoustics get worse every year. So
the procedural posture, the procedural vehicle that we had available to us was Article 4605 of the Texas Code of Criminal Procedure.
4605 is the statutory response to the Ford remedy. And so that's the pathway. What did you do with that?
Well, Your Honor, we went into state court. We asked for a stay of execution. We asked for appointment of counsel.
Where did you go in the state court?
We went to the trial court, to the convicting
All right.
court. So we asked the convicting court to stay the execution. We asked the convicting court to appoint us as counsel for purposes of the Article 4605 proceeding, and then we filed a motion for expert investigative assistance.
But you didn't file a 4605 petition?
That's correct, Your Honor. We did not file that petition because we did not have enough evidence, we believe, to meet that threshold under 4605, and the state is insisting that that threshold should actually be a higher one because Mr. Panetti had previously been determined to be competent under 4605. I think that's arguable, number one, because the Supreme Court of the United States.
But do you maintain then that the defendant in these circumstances is always entitled to counsel and an expert assistance in order to meet the threshold to determine whether to go forward?
No, I'm not, Your Honor.
I would think not. The threshold is simply to see if there's enough there to warrant turning on the engines that go with this process, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So what's the basis for your entitlement to counsel? And you know, that's part of my question. And the other part of the question is, he was already represented, right?
He was represented in federal court by myself and co-counsel, but he did not have, we were not appointed for purposes of Article 4605. And that's what we were litigating, trying to get appointed, compensated.
You did not think that you had the authority under your appointment to represent him in the state habeas?
Well, Your Honor.
Or was it a matter of compensation? I don't intend to be a pejorative term.
Certainly.
It takes money to prosecute these cases.
Right, and that's exactly what we didn't have, Your Honor.
But was that the purpose, to get you a federal appointment so you could get paid and get an expert, and more importantly, I must say, to get an expert appointed who could be compensated?
Right, I mean, it basically boils down to having expert assistance, having funding so that we can have an expert who can review the evidence that we did put together to make our initial showing under Article 4605.
How do you differentiate yourself from a whole range of other cases of people who can't meet the threshold? What does the threshold mean if you're saying, I think the effect of your argument is that you're entitled to a federal appointment and expert assistance in order to even go forward at all? And if that's true, then that would appear to be that the rule would then be that those appointments are made in every situation.
I don't think so, Your Honor. There still has to be that initial threshold, which we think is a colorable.
Well, I understand what you said. You need to make the threshold.
Well, now I'm talking about just making a colorable showing that would entitle us.
Well, you said colorable showing in your pleadings, but that's really not the language of the statute, is it?
That's not the language of the statute for purposes of getting additional funding and assistance under Article 4605 once that motion is filed.
Let's be clear. What you're asking us to find is that antecedent to the threshold determination, a demonstration of a colorable claim is sufficient to trigger your right to appointed counsel, federal counsel, and it says in the discretion of the court, expert assistance, correct?
That's correct. I mean, we're not asking this court
to... at least insofar as your procedure and the way you proceeded, that is your argument.
Well, our argument is that we're asking this court to decide whether or not the district court was incorrect in failing to appoint us.
I understand that. We get there.
Okay.
In order to get there, we have to go run the clock back, in my mind, to walk us through how we got to where we are.
We're not asserting that every Ford claimant is entitled to counsel or to expert assistance at that, to make that threshold, but we believe that we had provided enough information based on the records that we were given by the prison to show that Mr. Panetti had some substantial changes in his behavior and a qualitative difference in the nature of his psychotic symptoms in the last couple of years.
Now, didn't the state district court say, go ahead and file, you can file a bare bones 46.05 petition, and you can freely supplement it, give you time. Why didn't you take him up on that offer?
Because without expert assistance, Your Honor, it wouldn't have made any difference.
But you would have gotten expert assistance had you filed under 4605, wouldn't you?
We don't believe we would have, Your Honor. That's why we didn't file.
Well, that's what's troubling to me, because in your brief you cite these other cases where the state of Texas does give counsel, they do give experts when a 4605 petition is filed. And it seems to me, had you filed that and the state had said no counsel, no experts, you would be on different footing. But it seems to me you have to show that your remedy in state court is inadequate, and I don't see how you can show that when you didn't ask for a 4605 hearing and ask for counsel and experts to beef up. When the state made the offer, I'll give you, you can fire bare bones, I'll freely allow you to supplement.
The cases that we cited in our brief, Your Honor, were cases...
I know, they gave it pre-4605.
They gave it pre-filing.
But you didn't get to, you didn't file 4605 and the state said no expert, no counsel. So we, how do we know the state would say no? How do we know the state wouldn't give you a full and fair opportunity to develop your evidence in a 4605 proceeding?
Well, part of the reason, I believe, is under 4605E, there's a higher threshold that that portion of the statute is placed on the applicant.
Well, but if the state court said, I'm going to give you running room, breathing room here, and they would have done that, we don't know that they wouldn't have done that. It seems to me you have to at least try.
I think the problem is that if we had failed to make that threshold, then there would have been a determination.
Well, then you could say they didn't give us adequate time, they didn't give us counsel, they didn't give us experts. Then you could say, I tried to exhaust state remedies, well, and they're inadequate.
You're afraid to file a skeletal petition because you're afraid of it, if we had a quick determination, then you'd be bound by the determination. In essence, you didn't trust, it sounds like you just didn't trust the district court to treat it as a skeletal petition and let you develop it.
Based on our own experience, Your Honor, that without a face-to-face evaluation by a mental health expert in the motion for under Article 4605, the courts will not find that the petitioner has made the threshold showing. We believed it was absolutely imperative that we have at least some preliminary report by an expert who had conducted a face-to-face evaluation of Mr. Panetti. And without that, we weren't going to meet the threshold. So our argument is that the state court process, the circumstances of our particular case, rendered the state court process ineffective to protect Mr. Panetti's rights. But we're not at that stage yet. We're simply asking for an opportunity to move this claim forward.
In the federal court, in a habeas action. You're done with the state as far as you're concerned.
We may be done with the state. There's two things to keep in mind, Your Honor. We're still asking for an opportunity to develop this claim. There may not be a claim of present incompetency to be executed.
But I thought you asked for counsel to file a federal habeas petition. That's what your briefing says.
That's correct. Again,
you're not asking for federal paid counsel to go back to state court.
That's correct, Your Honor.
But so you want to bypass the state. You've said we've been there, done that. We're ready to go in directly into federal habeas proceeding.
Well, we believe we should be allowed to file a federal habeas petition. But it's going to be up to the district court at some later time in the future, if we do file a federal habeas petition raising a Ford claim, that the claim needs to be exhausted and sent back. And that's based on the state making that affirmative argument that we must go back. And that's the district court deciding that the state court process wasn't in effect.
You haven't filed a federal habeas petition. Yeah.
Excuse me, I'm sorry.
I said you haven't filed a federal habeas petition. When do you intend to do that? You're saying you got to have a lawyer to do that? You are a lawyer.
Yes, Your Honor.
And you're federally appointed.
That's correct, Your Honor. But
and what else do you want?
We need expert assistance, Your Honor. We need authorization.
So it comes down to just the assistance of an expert assistance.
Yes, Your Honor. And I think this court's decision in Hearn really provides the guidance that the court needs for determining how to address.
What I'm saying, when you went before Judge Sparks, you just went there on a motion, didn't you? What did you file before Judge Sparks?
With Judge Sparks, we filed an extensive motion for stay of execution that included all of the...
I understand that, but
yes.
You asked a stay of execution. What relief did you want to make appointments? Did you file a habeas petition with him?
No, we didn't, Your Honor, because I believe that this court's decision in Hearn, coupled with McFarland, say that 3599 gives the appointment of counsel.
You were asking him to appoint counsel so you could file a federal habeas petition.
That we hope to file once we had expert assistance and someone who could evaluate Scott Panetti face to face. So that's what we needed. And if this court grants that, then my hope is that we will eventually file a federal habeas petition.
What do you want this court to do?
We want this court to formally appoint us. You know, we were denied appointment by the federal district.
What else?
And we want this court to authorize reasonably necessary funds for expert investigative assistance, and we want this court to keep the state.
And then do what?
And then the case would be remanded to the district court to
back to Judge Sparks.
Correct.
With instruction to what?
instructions to provide reasonably necessary assistance, which would include an expert, and that we would be given a meaningful opportunity
to enable you to file your federal habeas.
That's correct, Your Honor. And at that point, then the state can present evidence and present legal arguments, affirmative defenses to why we shouldn't be in federal district court. So we're not filing a federal habeas petition, but we're not at that point yet. And I think, as I said, you know, the decision by this court in Hearn is actually very much on point with what we believe the court should do in Mr. Panetti's case.
You said you made a colorable showing before Judge Sparks?
Yes.
What is that evidence? In summary, what was it?
In summary, this unprecedented request to be prescribed antipsychotic medication, something he had never done in nearly 20 years on death row because he didn't believe he was mentally ill. For the first time, Mr. Panetti admitted to mental health treatment staff at the prison that he could no longer cope with his psychotic symptoms through reading the Bible and prayer. And the third piece of evidence we provided was that Mr. Panetti was reporting delusions greater in scope and in increased intensity, including this paranoia that correctional officers and prison gangs were in a conspiracy against him, were tampering with his food, and were contacting his family members on the internet. And that Mr. Panetti believed, in addition, that he was being executed because, not only for his religious beliefs, but because he was speaking out about this corruption in the prison. And then the fourth piece of evidence we provided is that Mr. Panetti was found to have committed serious disciplinary offenses for the first time in his nearly 20 years on death row, the most serious of which.
So you're saying that Judge Sparks was in error in his determination that this, he really hadn't heard anything that significantly distinct from the evidence he had heard previously?
Yes, Judge Sparks, we believe, used the prior competency determinations almost as a means of resolving the current one, but it was a...
You don't think it's error for the judge. The inherent in this Ford process is that if on multiple occasions the trial judge is going to acquire judicially a great deal of knowledge about the case. And you suggested anything in any error in him forthrightly saying this is what I've heard before and I have that before me. What else you got? And then he says I don't see or hear anything different. Now that he doesn't start afresh, you don't get a new judge. You agree with that?
I agree with that. We don't get a new judge, but I respectfully don't agree with the use of these prior competency determinations to resolve the current one. And that's because of the
Help me with that. What do you mean, the use of the prior competency determination? He's supposed to put that out of his mind? I don't understand what you mean.
I think it has limited relevance for purposes of determining whether or not counsel should be appointed and funding should be granted. And that limited relevance is solely to determine whether or not Mr. Panetti has...
Well, if the only evidence he's got before him is he's heard this before, that he's had delusions and so forth, I'm just assuming that hypothetically. If he's heard all that before and he's not hearing anything new, then how have you made your colorable showing is a threshold to showing that you can go forward. And if it hasn't changed, you're still under the prior ruling. The whole issue is, has he in that 7-year period deteriorated to a point that he is now incompetent to be executed? Right?
That's correct, but that's not what the judge did in this case, I believe, Your Honor. What Judge Sparks ended up doing was weighing that evidence, the new evidence, and weighing it against the previous evidence that had been presented, and then making an adjudication on a claim that we hadn't even filed, saying it wasn't measurably different. And I think the only question the court should be asking at that point is the evidence new? Meaning, did this evidence exist at the prior competency determination? That's
how would you frame the question that Judge Sparks, in your view, should have answered?
He should have answered that this was new evidence, and that this evidence was not trivial or insignificant, and that this evidence was not being presented for purposes of delaying at the last minute an execution. That's what that threshold showing.
But it sounded to me like that's what Sparks answered that question. You disagree with it and challenge that, but I thought that's what he was saying.
Well, I think the problem is that he was weighing that evidence. He was adjudicating it, in a sense, at a threshold stage where I don't think it was appropriate, because if he's determining that the evidence is not materially different, and we have not had an opportunity, especially in light of Dr. Penn's affidavit, that Dr. Penn's affidavit was presented in order to show that Mr. Panetti's condition had not markedly changed. And once that affidavit was submitted, we believe that implicated some serious constitutional problems about due process. But we never had an opportunity to rebut that affidavit from the state's own expert with our own expert, or to explain the inadequacies of that affidavit submitted by Dr. Penn.
All right, what's wrong with, what if we issued an order saying we appoint you as federal counsel pre-petition, but we strongly suggest to the district court that there are going to be exhaustion issues here, and that he stay the proceedings and remand to state court for you to exhaust your Ford claims?
We're going to be right back in the same position, Your Honor, if we don't have expert funding, because...
Well, why don't you file a 4605 and see what the state gives you or doesn't give you?
Because the risk...
Because then you can be on the record. If you don't give us enough time, you don't give us adequate resources, then you can bring it in federal habeas, but you haven't given the state, it seems to me, an adequate opportunity for you to exhaust your remedies. You're trying to bypass the state.
We are not trying to bypass, Your Honor. We made an honest effort to try and make our 4605 threshold showing. And I would direct this court's attention to Green versus Thaler, where this court said that the petitioner in that case trying to append onto a 2010 determination that he was competent to be executed by the state courts, attempted to append 2 years later in this court new evidence that suggested he was no longer competent. And this court said that that prior determination of competency was not undermined by the new evidence, and that new evidence was actually a new claim, and that this court was not going to contemplate filing or asking the district court to provide funds to investigate and to examine Mr. Petitioner in that case.
So your pathway in the future, as I understand it, is to ask us to basically reverse federal district judge here, Judge Sparks, and either that and return the case to him, I suppose, and with direction to appoint counsel and give you expert assistance, and then with that you then you will go back to the state court. Now my question is it what is available to you under the statute, the Ford, what I call the Ford statute, state statute. Now, I thought that the state had already, the state court had already, in essence, dismissed that whole process. But you bypassed it, or they had turned you down, in essence. You said you didn't file a motion. You weren't treated as a compliance. You follow me?
I'm not quite sure I understood
sure,
that question.
Yeah, I don't blame you if you couldn't follow there, because I shifted gears on you. Go back. What I want you to do is to walk us down the path that you want to travel. If we send it back to Judge Sparks, and it would have to be because we think that he was in error in not making the appointment, right?
That's correct.
And in other words, we've got to conclude, in your view, that you did make a colorable showing.
That's correct.
Right. And then, okay, and then he does that. Now what do you do?
Well, the hope is that we would also have funding for expert assistance, and that we would...
I'm assuming that you get both. You get a lawyer, funding for a lawyer, funding for your expert.
Yes, and that we would then have an opportunity to investigate and develop the claim that Mr. Panetti is presently incompetent to be executed. That at that point, if we did have such a claim, we would file...
But where do you go with that claim?
We would file a federal habeas corpus petition.
You don't go back to the state court. You go back to the area question.
We don't go back at that point, Your Honor. There may be a point later.
Okay, you want to go there, and then they state filed, said you haven't exhausted your remedies, and then you say, well, hold this, and we'll go back. Now you go back to state court.
But you would argue you have exhausted.
We would argue exhaustion's excused, Your Honor, under 2254B. But if we have that expert assistance and counsel to investigate this claim.
Well, I'm not talking about whether that helps you enhance you to proceed. I don't question that. I'm just trying to see it precisely what the pathway for this case to proceed.
Well, speculating that the district court may.
I'm not sure what's open to you in the state of Texas right now.
Well, I think if the district court said that we had failed to exhaust, then there's nothing preventing us. There's no procedural bar, as there would be under Article 1107.1, for getting back into state court and now raising this claim through an Article 4605 motion. But now it's a developed claim, and I believe now with expert assistance, we can meet that threshold.
You're actually asking the federal courts to give you a lawyer and expert to develop a case that you then can take back to state court.
Well, we don't think we should have to take it back to state court, Your Honor. We think this, we provided an opportunity, we were denied an opportunity to present this claim.
But if there's a failure to exhaust issue that rules and the court says no, you didn't exhaust, then you'll take your federally paid for claim back to state court.
Yes, Your Honor, and I agree it sounds like a very inefficient process, and it doesn't seem right that the federal courts have to pay counsel in state court to exhaust state court proceedings, but we attempted to get that type of funding for experts and counsel. It was denied us, and I think that is certainly adequate information, adequate circumstances that show the state court process.
Because I understand one of your additional complaints about the proceedings before Judge Sparks was you contemplate the showing of even a colorable showing and also a showing of an additional showing that there's a threshold showing that you will actually I'm not going to pursue that. What I want to be clear about it is that I thought you were saying that at when you went forward to make your threshold showing, that in essence would contemplate an ex parte type of presentation, or at least a non-adversarial presentation, and that you then were faced with an adversarial response because the state, while resisting your opportunity to obtain appointed counsel and to expert assistance specifically, employed Dr. Penn, an expert, and had the man examined and filed that with the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals. Is that correct or not?
Yes.
Is that a basis? And what relief do you seek from that? So what do you do with that?
Well, just one clarification. Dr. Penn himself didn't evaluate Scott Panetti. He asked other qualified mental health professionals to attempt to evaluate Mr. Panetti. But what we would do with that is we believe that filing by the state triggers due process concerns of Ford and Panetti, that we are being denied an opportunity.
Yes, I understand that is all of this is a due process argument, and all of this what we just discussed is a due process based argument. But to whom are you are directing that to Judge Sparks? Did you do that before?
Yes, we did. We raised the due process arguments. Our first line of argument, of course, was the statutory grounds. Section 3599.
What relief does he give you from, let's assume that was a denial of due process, what relief do you get?
Well, I think we get funding for an expert who can examine Mr. Panetti and then refute or challenge the adequacy of Dr. Penn's affidavit.
The remedy would be to equalize the state that gave you an expert, hired an expert. They were well funded. They got an expert. They filed that, and we, in order, as a matter of due process, we're entitled to reply to that with expert assistance.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. In fact, the Supreme Court in Panetti said it's a counterweight.
I'm just trying to get clarity to these arguments.
I understand, Your Honor. I see the red lights on.
I have another question. Did you argue in state court that Article 4605 is unconstitutional because the threshold requirement that someone who, let's assume that they are mentally incompetent to make, can't be made without counsel or experts.
We put that in a footnote, Your Honor. It wasn't the basis for any argument, I believe, a constitutional argument.
Wouldn't a federal court have to find that the state process that's provided by statute is unconstitutional? And if you haven't asked the state courts to pass on that in the first instance, how can we pass on that?
I don't think we have to determine, this court has to determine whether any of the 4605 procedures are unconstitutional, because I think under Section 2254B, which talks about excusing exhaustion, it's just a matter of whether the state court processes in that particular set of circumstances were inadequate to protect Mr. Panetti's rights.
The reason you're saying they're inadequate is the wording of 46.05. You're saying that you can't meet the threshold of 46.05 and you shouldn't be required to.
Well, that was one of the reasons, Your Honor.
But you're saying it's unconstitutional, but did you make that argument in state court?
Well, we made the argument that 4605E shouldn't even apply to Mr. Panetti.
Well, assume you lose on that. Did you argue that 4605E is unconstitutional because it sets too high a bar for someone who's mentally incompetent?
Your Honor, to be honest with you, I'd have to take a look at that. I believe it's just a lengthy footnote where we made that argument, and I don't know if we raised it in a constitutional fashion, but we did say that certainly when the Supreme Court remanded Mr. Panetti's case, one of the reasons they did that is because they found the state court process unconstitutional. And so any fact findings that came out of that 2004 competency hearing in and of themselves then are unreliable. So placing a higher burden on us in that instance.
But now we have Judge Sparks ruled against you, and we're starting over the new proceeding. So we don't have a determination that the statute on its face is unconstitutional.
We do not, Your Honor.
We don't have a ruling from the Supreme Court that, as applied to Mr. Panetti in the present circumstances, it's unconstitutional. It seems to me that would be a threshold requirement before we could say that the state process is inadequate.
I thought your constitutional argument was an as-applied argument. By definition, that wouldn't be facial.
Well,
I agree with that. Did you make the as-applied argument that it's unconstitutional?
Yeah.
We made the as-applied argument that the circumstances of Mr. Panetti's case deprived him of the due process in the Article 4605 proceedings. But I don't think the court needs to grapple with all of those issues at this simply asking for appointment stage and asking for expert funding under Section 3599.
Well, it seems to me it bears on the likelihood of success on the merits, and why should the federal courts pay for federal counsel if you have no, and I'm not saying you don't, I'm saying if the district court found you have no possibility of success because of exhaustion issues, failure to raise issues, isn't that something that should go into the equation on whether the federal district court appoints counsel?
I don't think we're dealing with fatal procedural bars because of the unique nature of Ford claims. This is a brand new claim that the filing of a petition in the district court is considered part of the initial application, so that there isn't any reason to worry about the fact that this might be barred if we were to go back, or that we haven't exhausted and we're going to be procedurally barred because we can't meet the subsequent application provisions of Article 11071. None of those apply because of the unique nature of Ford claims.
You still have to present to the state court.
All right, let me ask you two tail-end questions. One, is your view, assuming you got the relief you asked for in terms of appointment and expert, is it your view there's no circumstance in which you are now barred in the Texas state court to pursue the claim that you didn't pursue initially?
I can't think of a situation where a Ford claim would be barred, especially because of the fact that the courts have recognized the dynamic nature of severe mental illness.
That's kind of spouting an abstraction to me. That doesn't really mean anything to me. I mean, I understand you're saying it's nuanced and it's different and all of that, but I haven't seen any cases you've cited that really says all this, that you get to, you haven't assailed the constitutionality of the Texas statute, you kind of bypass it strategically. We don't have a case yet where a court has embraced sort of this strategic move not to go there first. So I just want to be sure I'm clear that even if you got an appointment from us and you sent it back to Judge Sparks and Judge Sparks sent you back to state court, is it your view that there's no way you're barred in that the Texas court cannot conclude as a matter of law that you're barred from pursuing a claim now that you didn't have before?
I don't think there is, Your Honor.
All right.
And I do want to be clear and respectfully disagree that we didn't strategically avoid Article 4605. We were not petitioner in Green versus Taylor. We attempted.
Okay, I take back the strategic, but the record will reflect there wasn't one filed.
It was not
an article. And the statute wasn't hidden, so we were aware it was there. All right, my last question to get in. Am I right in Drury versus the state, you were the same counsel in that case?
Yes, I was in state court.
So you and Mr. Howell on both sides of that case, right? All right. No, I saw Dustin Howell.
I think there was a difference.
All right, but you were in that case, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
All right, what I'm trying to, this part, to get clear in my head, I heard you say to us and rattle off the four pieces of evidence you feel in this instance are the demarcation between what was before and what was now, right? All right. Now, read Drury, where the Texas court is found that there was the, quote, substantial showing, close quote. When I look at your counsel there, in that case, pleadings, supplemental pleadings, prison records, et cetera, one thing I see there that I don't see here is that in that case, you had an expert opinion by a psychologist as part of the package. My question is, since that's 4605, what was the mechanism to have an expert opinion as part of the package in presenting a similar kind of claim that's missing in the calculus of this case?
The exact same thing that we did here, Your Honor. We filed a motion.
You had an appointed, you had an appointment of that expert in that case, and that's how the expert was able to opine?
That's correct. We received funding for that expert to assist us prior to filing the Article 4605 motion.
And that motion had been granted by the state court?
The motion was not granted by the state court, but the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals found that we did make a threshold showing under Article 4605.
Well, yeah, in their opinion in October, they found you had made the showing, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
But the district court had found that you did not, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, I'm saying in the package presented to the district court was the opinion of the expert. So at that point, the court hadn't decided. The court said you hadn't been. I'm trying to find out how you had availability of the expert to make your substantial showing in that instance. Yet in this instance, it's the absence of the expert. What was the funding mechanism for that presentation?
The
you
funding,
understand my question?
I think so, Your Honor. We filed a motion for expert assistance, for expert funding, in the Marcus Drury case.
In state court?
In state court with the convicted court, and that court granted that motion and provided us, I don't remember how much money.
The state trial court?
The state trial court.
Okay.
And that's, I presented some handful of cases in the briefing, which the state trial courts have avoided, the very questions we're grappling with here today, because they did provide counsel and pre-filing assistance.
Okay, well, I'm sure it's something I'm missing. I'm just trying to figure out how, if you file that motion, in that case, in state court, and you got appointment of the expert, why was that not an available avenue in this case in the same state court under some circumstances?
Well, it wasn't the same state court judge, but it's certainly exactly the same procedure we used in Marcus Drury's case, but the outcome was entirely different.
So that, okay. All right. I just
because there's
no
explicit provision in Article 4605, as there is in Article 11071, or pre-filing assistance of experts. In Article 11071, there is, and it's kind of a colorable showing threshold. Specific facts that suggest a claim of possible merit exists. But because of the fact that Texas Court of Criminal Appeals has decided that Ford claims are not cognizable under Article 11071, places them into Article 4605, where there isn't an explicit mandatory provision for appointment of counsel or pre-filing authorization of funds for experts and investigators.
All right, we'll hold you until we vote. You'll have a chance to come back up.
Thank you
for addressing the issues and answering our questions. All right, Mr. Howe.
May it please the court. The only question before the court at this stage is whether or not the district court used its discretion when it denied Mr. Panetti's request for Section 3599 funding. It did not for two reasons. First, as for his request for experts and investigators, the court below did not abuse its discretion because they were not reasonably necessary as required by the statute. And that is so because Mr. Panetti cannot overcome the threshold showing.
Well, how can a person who's incompetent to be executed, assuming they are, how can they possibly meet the 4605 threshold without counsel or experts?
Well, actually, in the Drury opinion, which Chief Judge Stewart referenced, the court walks through just how the Court of Criminal Appeals views this threshold showing. And it contemplates that these sorts of things do not require experts or attorneys at that initial phase just to make the that threshold.
Let's say he's so incompetent he can't write a letter to anybody. He's in solitary confinement. How does he even get a 4605 hearing?
He's going to be entitled to counsel. Or even if he's not, all he has to do is make some sort of showing under 4605 to allow him to put that initial showing of evidence, some evidence.
How does he do that without a lawyer and an expert?
And add to that, when the state is represented and the state has hired an expert that they don't want him to have.
Well, this actually brings up an interesting point. Now, I'll answer.
It may raise an interesting point, but take mine first.
I'm sorry, I got my lines crossed here. Judge, can you repeat your question? I'm sorry.
Both the questions are joined. Yeah. The front end comes from Judge Owen, and the back end. Oh, and the state has an expert which they don't have. So it's really one question.
Right. Okay. So Drury actually says that in the state proceedings that that it is more like 3599's predecessor and that it's ex parte. And so the state isn't. The Drury actually, when it walks through this evaluation of what the threshold showing is required and demonstrating that it's not, it specifically says in state court in these 4605 proceedings that they're not intended to be adversarial.
Well, if you back away from this and look at it, to me, if you contemplate a threshold, minimal threshold kind of a showing, and that's required in order for the prisoner to get a lawyer, that surely the state doesn't have the right to go engage experts and lawyers and to make those filings in opposition to the. To this unrepresented counsel who also doesn't have the expert assistance. Expert assistance in these cases is critical. This is not the ordinary case. You get in many areas where expert assistance can be helpful, but no one, if anyone, understands psychiatry or that is the mental competence. Well, I'd say if anybody understands it, maybe the psychiatrists do, but surely no one else does.
I don't disagree that expert and the assistance of a psychiatrist is necessary to prove.
Why do you get those and they don't at a threshold showing? That's all I'm asking.
Well, under Article 4605, this again, it's not.
Okay, it says that. Why isn't that a patent denial of due process?
Well, this is what the Supreme Court contemplated in Ford was this threshold requirement that until it serves a purpose to prevent delay.
But they didn't say without counsel or without experts. They just said threshold requirement. My question to you is, how can someone who truly is incompetent to be executed, I'm not saying Mr. Panetti is, but someone is, how in the world do they make a threshold showing without a lawyer and experts? How is that supposed to work? Walk me through it.
In a case like this, presumably a date is set, a notice is given, and the individual who is subject to that execution date, it would be required.
He's mentally incompetent. How does he mount a 4605 challenge on his own?
Well, practically speaking, these individuals aren't going to be proceeding pro se.
Okay, they get his brother-in-law, who's a lawyer, and says, I don't know much about this, but I would like to kick off a 4605 proceeding. I want you to hire my brother-in-law, a lawyer, and an expert.
Well, again, an expert is not necessary at this stage, and we don't know here what might have happened because...
Okay, let's ask what might have happened. If he'd filed a 46.05, would the state have said you're not entitled to counsel or an expert to develop the record? You've got to come with the record before you get to the filing stage. What would your position have been?
So if he had come forward with the same evidence that he put in support of...
And it said, I know I don't have enough... I'm filing under 4605. I know I don't meet the threshold, but if you'll give me a lawyer and an expert, I can meet it, I think. What would the state say?
Well, if he doesn't meet the threshold, then
he's not entitled to it. Well, see, this is an impossible standard.
This is the standard contemplated, though, in
Ford. It's impossible. Ford didn't say without a lawyer and without an expert. That's not what it said.
We also said that's unconstitutional when it gets to be that.
I want to understand how the state plans to give due process to people who truly are incompetent to be executed to meet the 4605 standard.
Well, again, the Court of Criminal Appeals walks through exactly what that standard is in Drury. And
with counsel and experts.
The way the Court of Criminal Appeals lays out its understanding of the 4605 language is that it is not in an adversarial proceeding, but that the full due process protections do not attach until that threshold showing is made.
You didn't create this system. You just have a fun task of defending it.
Well, let me ask the question. Let's suppose it's non-adversarial. He gets a friend of the court to go file 4605 and says, but I need help to meet the threshold. In a non-adversarial proceeding, and what does the state say? So sad, too bad, you can't get there on your own, so to hell with you?
Well, not in those exact words.
Well, what are the words? What would the state say?
This case, I think, provides an example of what it could look like. Is in this case, Mr. Weirsach and Mr. Panetti's attorneys requested discovery, and TDCJ provided, I think, it's 4,500 pages of records of grievances and everything else that was distilled down and put in support of this motion to appoint counsel and request funding.
And who's going to review those 4,500 pages of a history of this patient? The lawyers, and very talented lawyers, but they're not psychiatrists. It's telling that state's lawyers are as able as these folks are. The first thing you did was to get a doctor and a psychiatrist to assist you in responding to that.
Well,
that's all the difference in the world.
Well, Mr. Panetti's attorneys also obtained a psychiatrist to review the records that they obtained.
He has no money. He's just depending on charity for that.
Right. It just comes back, though, to Ford, which said that the full procedural protections do not attach until that threshold showing is made.
And how do you make the threshold showing if you're truly incompetent? We keep going around here. That's you cannot really, in good faith, sit here and say that's what the Supreme Court contemplates. Can you?
Assistance is available to
the okay, individual. How do they get assistance? Who pays for it? How do they get it? Just tell us that there's a due process constitutional procedure to get assistance. How does it work?
Currently, under Drury's interpretation of 4605 in state court, it is not contemplated that these individuals necessarily have state-funded attorneys at that initial threshold stage.
Well, let me ask you a question. What's wrong with our simply then sending this back to Judge Sparks and to say that vacate his decision that require him to appoint a lawyer and an expert assistance to remedy what otherwise will be a signal denial of due process, and then the only result of that will be that we have a person who threatened with execution will have a lawyer and assistant to determine the fact and determine whether it is up or down. I mean, if we're going to run a capital punishment system, we can't run it this way. You're not going to have capital punishment.
Right. Well, the problem here is that The procedure as it's been, as it is in place under Article 4605 has not yet been invoked. And so the question
is, let's move forward. Let's suppose Judge Sparks appoints a lawyer. Judge Sparks says you have not adequately exhausted your state remedy, sends you back to state court. Now, what is the state's obligation to appoint him counsel and an expert in his 4605 proceeding?
Again, under the current...
So you're going to let him navigate those waters by himself. So then you're going to be right back in federal court, and we're going to say, lack of due process, let's have a full-fledged, brand-new federal habeas proceeding. Now, where does that get you?
The exhaustion requirement that's present in AEDPA serves a purpose, and that is to ensure that these claims get adjudicated, these state court judgments are adjudicated in state court before they are adjudicated in federal court.
Right, and that due process is afforded. Now, when do you, and at what point does the state inject due process into this 4605 proceeding?
Once the threshold showing is made.
You're not helping us.
What we have is language of the statute as passed by our legislature and the Court of Criminal Appeals' interpretation of it. And again, I would commend the Drury discussion of that standard to the court, because I think it's the most thorough and recent discussion of what is required.
Drury just tells us that substantial showing is not the same as some evidence. That's really what he tells us.
Right.
He answers the question. Just substantial is not synonymous with some evidence. We get that out. Rule. And then the other thing we get is in that case they found that he had met the standard, but he had an expert as part of the package of what the district court had, and the Court of Criminal Appeals said the error was that the trial court weighed the evidence. It wasn't supposed to be adversarial. I mean, that's really the teaching of the jury, is defining some evidence is not the same as substantial, so we know that. Number two is saying the trial court is not supposed to be adversarial. To the extent you weigh evidence, wrong. It's supposed to be just whatever the minimum is showing. In that case, you're an expert. I don't know what would have happened if the state had Mr. Dr. Beer? Dr. Wynn?
Penn.
I don't know what would have happened there if there had been a Dr. Penn affidavit in the mix, but that's speculative. That's really all jury speaks to. I say all, but it's helpful at least to eliminate what the standard is, but in that instance, that's why I was asking the counsel opposite, okay, where did Dr. Mostyn come from? He says that the state appointed the expert, I assume, pursuant to the state procedures. Is that accurate?
No, it was actually a departure, because in that case, they actually did obtain some of this preliminary funding that they also sought here. That's my understanding, and my friend in opposition may be able to explain this better, because I was not involved in that case, but my understanding is that they did request this preliminary funding, just as they did here, before they filed their Article 4605 motion, and obtained some funding, but then did not obtain the funding to go forward with their full claim. So that's what the Court of Criminal Appeals problem is.
Well, that's the difficulty I had. I mean, I read the case five times, but I read it once, but it doesn't tell you anything in terms of where Dr. Mostyn came from. You know, it just says, I don't know where she came from, but I mean, she's part of the calculus that the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals said was sufficient for him to meet his burden. But it's not evident from the opinion, I didn't read the district courts, of how counsel had a doctor in that calculus. Because the rest of it is the same thing here. Pleadings, prison records, we know they subpoenaed it, they had a battle about discovery. But the ingredient to jump out is that there was a doctor who had interviewed him, and the question was, she didn't have all the records she had to review, but it's not lost on it, but they sent it back simply because they said the judge should have waited. So I'm just trying to understand, as a Louisiana lawyer, Texas procedure in terms of, you heard the earlier scenario, if similar situation, he was in Texas court and made the funding request, wadi wadi, assume the state would oppose that, because you would say he's not entitled to it until he makes the showing.
Right, and that's what happened here, is they made this request for sort of preliminary funding And we responded to that and said, no, funding mechanism comes through Article 4605. And until you invoke that procedure, we oppose your motion. The state district court said, you've got to get a 4605 motion on file. And as the judges noted earlier,
but the difference is you oppose it this time, and the other time you didn't oppose it.
Or did you?
It sounds to me like the trial judges went with you both ways.
There's not been a 4605.
He adopted the state's position. I don't mean if it's right or wrong, but he adopted the state's position. Because the first time you didn't oppose it, it was granted. The second time you opposed it, and it wasn't granted.
Did you oppose it in jury? Did the state oppose funding?
I think that was the problem the CCA had, is that the state did oppose it, and the Court of Criminal Appeals said no. At that stage, it's a preliminary, or I'm sorry, it should not be an adversarial proceeding. If there is evidence contrary to their request, then it necessarily shows that they've overcome the threshold showing. That's my understanding of the rule. To go back to your honors.
I'm just trying to understand, it's the same state of Texas, so I'm just trying to understand if the state opposed, funding, based on the legal principle that you articulated here, if that's the sustaining principle, I'm just trying to figure out why that argument didn't carry in the other case, whereas the state is making an argument here, where we have some inconsistency between the positions. That's what I'm trying to understand in the case. I understand your point well that he hadn't filed for this. Mm-hmm. I get it. I'm just trying to understand in the mechanics that, as you heard earlier, assuming we were to grant his motion here for funding, counsel, and Judge Sparks sends him back, or we don't, we send him back, whatever, whether or not the state is going to sort of do a gotcha on this appointment, I just don't understand.
We can't. If the court here were to say, Judge Sparks abused his discretion when he concluded that the evidence that was offered to make the threshold showing in federal court was not different in kind, that still leaves Judge Sparks, and really this court should address it too, of this well now what question, right? And that is the exhaustion question. And so it's only excused if the state procedure is ineffective.
And that's what I'm trying to get at. Is the Attorney General prepared to stipulate that under no set of circumstances, unless uncounseled death row inmates can come in and make the substantial showing on 4605, under no circumstances will the state of Texas provide counsel and experts to help them make the 4605 showing?
Right, and there's no precedent.
I'm asking what's the state's position. Is the Attorney General prepared to put in writing to this court that under no circumstances will they provide counsel or experts to an indigent death row inmate to try to make meet the 4605 threshold showing?
Yes, Your Honor, I will state that. It's subject to my ability to confer with my, if I'm incorrect, I would
so
like to be able to.
So an indigent inmate is on their own until they meet the threshold 4605 setting. No counsel, no expert.
Correct, not to make just the threshold showing. And I think that is the current state of law. That's all that Ford requires.
So why should we send it back for exhaustion? I mean, you're telling us there's no point.
You have to send it back for exhaustion because AEDPA requires.
Well, if you're going to stipulate that that's the procedure they'll get, what's the point in sending it back?
Because that's all that Ford contemplates. It says that Ford says that these threshold requirements are necessary, that they are... the court expects that there would be high thresholds in certain cases, and that the full due process protections that Ford discusses as being necessary to bring a competency claim do not attach until the threshold is satisfied.
What Justice Powell spoke of with articulating they didn't define all of the procedures that follow. They left that to the states, consistent with due process, to develop these procedures. And what you're hearing is substantial concern about the procedures that comply with the due process.
And if the court concludes that the 4605 procedure does not comport
as applied,
with due process,
as applied
in this case, then...
No, as it was applied here. And I don't know that we have to say more than you turned it into an adversarial proceeding, and at least in those circumstances, there was you worked a denial of due process. I don't think.
Well, I wouldn't be. I'd be prepared to say it's not as applied if the state would give some assurance that if he in fact filed a 4605 motion and as the state court offered and said, I'll let it be bare bones, I'll give you time to amend, and the state would say yes, and we'll pay your lawyer and we'll pay your expert to help you fill in the bare bones, I would have no problem saying the state's giving him a shot, but you're saying you won't do that.
I guess I can't commit to that standing here at this moment. It's just based on my understanding of this law, is that that's not required. Now, if I'm wrong,
your instructions are when you go to court, don't wave anything but your arms.
I'm just not prepared I can't really say one way or the other on that. I mean, my understanding is that those due process protections don't attach, but if I'm wrong, I'm certainly happy to update the court. But that's my understanding of this. And in any event, Mr. Panetti was, to be sure, he has been represented by counsel throughout. So if it's just, the intention here is to require this threshold showing. So ultimately, the court is going to have to decide whether or not he has to exhaust his claim. And if it is excused here, I think
that'll be decided in a federal habeas petition. We might hint one way or the other, but that's not really in front of us today, is it?
No, only to the extent that it informs the question of whether the district court abused its discretion in denying funding.
Right, right.
Because the district court denied funding because it concluded that the evidence he offered was not different in kind and therefore did not reach the threshold. But the district court could have easily also decided that the claim was unexhausted and therefore denied funding. And we raised the exhaustion issue in the district court, but the district court didn't mention it in its decision. But that is an alternative basis. And that's something that this court recognized in Brown versus Stevens in deciding what constitutes a substantial need for funding under 3599. And the court noted a couple of examples of what places where it would not be an abuse of discretion. And one is when the claim is procedurally barred, as Mr. Panetti says here. And I think we want to be careful not to sanction these attempts to bypass the state system. Now, if there's an as-applied situation in which an individual is not being afforded due process because of how the state court is handling their 4605 motion, that's one thing. But
why is it that Green and Drury got pre-motion funding but not Mr. Panetti?
The record doesn't explain, and it was up to those judges. It's not required by 4605, but in those cases, perhaps the judge decided that.
And you affirmatively opposed funding?
In this case?
Yes.
Yes.
Isn't that contrary to what the Court of Criminal Appeals said in Drury, that this is supposed to be a non-adversarial proceeding?
Well, at 4605, proceeding is a non-adversarial proceeding. What we had here was a self-designed motion to appoint counsel and seek funding for experts. But
what if you filed the 4605 motion, and in the 4605 motion it asked for counsel and experts? Would the state have opposed that?
I can't speak on behalf of the lawyers who were there at that time, but I mean, if this were happening today, under my understanding of Drury, no, we should not oppose that motion.
Okay, so he could go back to the state court, file a 4605 petition, ask for counsel and experts, and the state would sit by and not oppose it.
Correct, because that
is... Okay, and so the trial court might well appoint counsel and experts under that scenario.
Yes, it's entirely possible.
What you said in mind, what's the state's position in that? When it goes by there and file it, what are you going to be arguing to that court?
Well, in that initial 4605 motion, that brings us back. I guess that brings us back, though, to are we in the same scenario that we're in that led us here? Are they going to file a motion that's not a 4605 motion?
What if they file, we say you need to exhaust, they go back and file a 4605 motion and say, you know, we recognize that what we filed doesn't get us there, but we want counsel and an expert give us 20 days, 30 days to get there. And would the state oppose that?
Assuming their motion, presumably would include the evidence that they got.
And they say, this may not make it, but if we get counsel and an expert, we think we can.
Why don't you disagree? If that's true, why don't you disagree with them to court and get on with it instead of running back and forth to state?
That's what I understand. If you're going to let them have counsel and an expert, give it to them. Why do we have to keep yo-yoing back?
Well, because, I mean, at this point, the procedure has not been invoked. And so if we do go back and they file this Article 4605 motion, yeah.
Well,
then it's up to the state court.
You may be able to make law. We're trying to get resolve this particular case. And if I get your the latest articulation here, I see absolutely no reason why you cannot simply agree to the appointment of counsel and an expert and conduct a hearing. Now that affords the state the opportunity to conduct the hearing, do everything else they want to, and then go through the ordinary processes. But I'm not sure that it doesn't sound like you're willing to agree to that.
Right, because as I understand it,
you're saying, well, that might work. Why don't you try it and see?
No,
I'm not worried.
Because I think we're missing a step here, which is. They file that initial motion, and it is that motion that the state court looks at and says, okay, does this reach the threshold to entitle you to additional funding to under the language of 4605, to mental health experts? And so they would go, the court here were to say, okay, it's unexhausted, send it back to state court. My understanding of how this should go is they would prepare an Article 4605 motion with the evidence they have, and file that with the state trial court, and then the state trial court then has the decision based on what they file as to whether or not it wants to appoint additional counsel or additional the two experts contemplated in the statute to go forward and make the full Ford claim. But if the state trial court looks at that motion as it is based on the evidence that they currently have and decides this doesn't meet the threshold, then that's it. That would be the decision. But then we would have a decision that's adjudicated on the merits
without,
and exhausted.
And then the federal courts could decide whether in that case it was denial of due process not to appoint counsel and experts.
Yes. Right. So we don't have that yet because the procedure has not yet been invoked. And so who's to say? I mean, I don't know if the state trial court had a proper 4605 motion with the same evidence attached. It may very well have concluded.
All right. If they go back to state court and file 4605 motion with what they have, with everything we've seen, what would the state's position be? And do you have a right to have a position at that point?
No, not at that initial stage. It is not contemplated to be an adversarial position. That's Drury. Drury says that.
The problem is you've already made it adversarial once, and I don't know how you erase that.
I can't speak to the timing of. All right. Well, part of the problem there, though, is that it was not an Article 4605 motion. So we opposed it, and candidly, I mean, we opposed it on the merits. But under my reading of Drury, if a proper 4605 motion is filed, that is an ex parte or one-sided showing at the outset.
Look at it this way. I understand all those arguments about what happened back then, et cetera. Given where you are today, it might be a wise course to see if you can't reach an agreement to give these people a full hearing and a lawyer and an expert and try the question of whether this man is competent to be executed, up or down. Can't do that, then you can't do that. I know of a legal impediment to that such an agreement. And I think you can assess that. You can't make that bail, I understand that agreement. But anyway, I do think you ought to explore those possibilities and tell us whether or not they're going to go anywhere.
Certainly, and I'm happy to discuss this both with Netty's attorneys and with the folks on our end.
We argue about these issues in the abstract. What you're dealing with is an individual that is convicted of killing two persons, family members, and has indisputably been grievously ill for decades. And he hasn't been, 7 years have passed since the last determination. And there are some lot of suggestions that he's hallucinating, doing other things. And the question that is, why don't we just go try that case issue and find out? And if he either he is or he isn't, then if the high court wants to change the definition of the law, they can do that. But based on what we have now, you'll resolve that question. In fairness to the state, in fairness to the petitioner.
Certainly, and I agree that these are important issues that should be fully explored.
Well, with great respect, we've been down that road once, and part of the reason that we took so long is because it went through the federal courts. We'll be right back here in 3 or 4 years, or however long it takes. I mean, that's not an answer to the procedural issues that are thorny.
Right. I would just note in closing that the threshold requirement is in 4605 and 3599. It is consistent with what Ford contemplated, and it serves a role, and that is to ensure that these cases don't continue to drag on and on.
No question. No one questions that. The question is, in this case, on these facts, where are we? What do we do? We only decide cases.
Certainly, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Howe. Appreciate your assistance. Back to you, Mr. Forster. Rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just want to make a couple of points. Number one, if you look at the Ford opinions, you'll count 7 justices there who assumed that Mr. Ford was represented by counsel. There's no question about that. Article 4605, if you look at the statute closely enough, it says some person is going to do this. It doesn't even say an attorney. So it does bring up that question, how in the world is someone who is potentially incompetent to be executed going to meet that threshold? And the state has put us
You do see the problem. I mean, this is a procedural conundrum because you get, I'm not saying you shouldn't, but you get counsel, you get an expert, the state court finds competent to be executed, the federal court, you've got a very short time period in here unless the state sets the execution out 6 months, a year, whatever time period. Then it's got to go up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and so then every time you get a new execution date, the clock, you just start over and over again. What's your solution to that?
Well, I don't think there is a solution necessarily, Your Honor, because...
Well, how many times do you get a competency hearing? Until his death?
No, you don't, because you still have to make that threshold showing that this is not a claim that is being filed for the purposes of delaying the execution. And we've got to show something new since the previous competency determination. So every time there's a Ford claim, the claimant has to overcome...
Let's say it's not very colorable. You allege some new facts. The state trial court denies it. The federal district court denies it. The Fifth Circuit denies it. Then you wait till the Supreme Court to review it. That's going to take at least a year, right?
It's hard to say, Your Honor.
It can take longer if the Supreme Court takes it and changes the definition, which is what's happening. That thing got strung out. It's not a year because of the process it took the court shifted gears and struggling with this issue. It's a very difficult issue to formulate the task for.
And there's no doubt that the Supreme Court has recognized the problems, the unique problems that Ford claims present. And Justice Connor herself, O'Connor, said in Ford that we can never definitively determine a person's competency for execution until the very moment of execution. But again, you would have to show some change in circumstances, some new evidence since that last competency determination. So that's what would eventually prevent the execution from being stayed. The one other point I wanted to make is that the Drury case does, number one, it is clear on page 527 of that opinion that the state convicting court granted our motion for funding for an expert. I believe we filed that ex parte, so the state didn't have an opportunity to propose it. But what the state is suggesting here is that we're simply to roll the dice, take our chances in state court when we don't have that funding for an expert, and just hope that we meet the threshold. Based on our experience, without that expert opinion attached after a face-to-face evaluation, we weren't going to meet that threshold. And I think our...
Well, should we send it back and give the state district court, give you a chance to file 4605 and give the state district court a chance to appoint counsel and an expert and see what happens?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because that process is going to be inadequate. We've already attempted to do it.
No, let's say that we say there is an adequate state process, at least on the books. You didn't avail yourself of it. And if they apply it to you, your client, in such a way that it's unconstitutional, that's a matter. But shouldn't we at least require you to file 4605 and see if you can meet the requirement?
Well, I think we're going to be caught in a fatal catch-22 there then, Your Honor, because if we don't make the substantial threshold showing...
Well, how do we know the trial court won't appoint counsel and an expert to allow you to try?
Well, we don't know for sure, Your Honor, but based on the cases that we've been involved in and the cases that we've cited, almost in every instance that I'm aware of, the courts have wanted to have that expert opinion after conducting a face-to-face evaluation. And short of that, you're going to have problems meeting that threshold. If you don't meet the threshold, then that's an adjudication on the merits, and the ADPA will then provide deference when it comes to the federal district court. So we would have a very difficult time then overcoming that threshold. In conclusion, I'd like to ask this court to allow this claim to move forward, to appoint counsel, to provide funding for an expert, and to maintain the stay so that Mr. Panetti can have a meaningful opportunity to determine whether he does have a claim that he is presently incompetent to be executed. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Counsel, both sides, for the briefing and argument. The purpose of the hearing was to get illumination. Not sure. We're all here, but I'm not sure how much clearer the issues are, which just speaks to complexity of the matter, but we'll do what we're paid to do, and that's decide the case. Although we hope that you will take to heart that questions and thoughts that the court posed to you were not sent out there just as, you know, things to be dismissed. It's a tough, hard case, but within every hard case, there is a solution. And, you know, we can litigate till cows come home and it doesn't really address this case. You all as counsel really are in the best posture to narrow the focus in this case and resolve it, whichever way it goes, or at least to narrow the scope of it to where it's in the prototypical litigation form as opposed to spinning out sort of academic law school type scenarios. What if this, what if that, what if this, what if that? Both can end up getting some bad law from that. So it just seems for the benefit of all concerned that if the issues are narrowed within the bonds, you know, we'll do what we have to do. But there surely is a solution somewhere there within. But in the meantime, we will hunker down on what you file with us and get something out. With that, this concludes the hearing for the day. This panel is adjourned.